From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, I'm Paris Alston. Welcome to Consider This from Boston, where, as coronavirus metrics go down and vaccinations go up, restrictions are easing, which means people who have been putting off important gatherings are finally able to schedule them again, notably funerals. Funeral directors and clergy members say more people are arranging traditional funerals for their loved ones that they originally had to postpone during the pandemic. GBH's Marilyn Scherer has been looking into this. Hi, Marilyn.
Hello, Paris. How are you?
I'm good. I hope you are. And Marilyn, I know this is a tough topic to discuss because there has been so much loss this past year.
It is a tough topic. It's sad. It's painful. It's full of sorrow. And there has been so much loss. But at the same time, I've been pleased and proud to be able to help share the stories of people who have lost loved ones and maybe help them maneuver through some of their grief.
Absolutely. And what exactly have you been hearing from folks in the funeral business in terms of demand for their services right now?
Well, what I've been hearing is that the need and the desire from families to hold funerals and memorials has increased dramatically now that restrictions are easing. There's not a lot of hard data throughout the state on how many funerals are being held week to week, month to month, when you compare it to pre-pandemic. But I spoke with C.R. Lyons, who's a funeral director owner in Danvers, Massachusetts. He's also president of the Massachusetts Funeral Directors Association. That organization represents 500 funeral homes. There are over 2,000 workers. And it's been tough. It's been tough for funeral home directors, for pastors, priests, ministers. They've been inundated with trying to comfort and support people who have lost their loved ones and have not had that closure. And they've tried to provide it. They're trained in it. They're in the death care industry. But he says with the first anniversary of many deaths coming up, people are now really seeking that comfort, and they would like to schedule the anniversary memorials or funerals.
So here we are a year later, and some folks are saying, I need this funeral. It might not be the normal funeral that we want, that we were hoping for, but we can have something.
Wow. And how are these gatherings different than they normally would have been?
Well, as you're aware, Paris, so much of what took place during the pandemic limited gatherings. And as a result of that, funerals, where normally people gather to grieve and to hug and embrace each other and comfort one another, many of them moved to virtual platforms. Many families had to cancel the funerals and memorials of people, there were a lot of restrictions. The state only allowed 10 people at a graveside service. There was no congregational singing allowed. Many people chose to postpone a formal funeral or memorial until a later date so that they could do it in a way that they felt they could get the support in the grieving process.
For a lot of people, these kinds of rituals are an important part of the grieving process, right? But the pandemic took that away. So how are families making up for that part of it?
Well, this is true. I think some people, I did speak with Lori Baudette of Springfield, who lost her dad, Jim Mandeville. He was a veteran at the Soldiers' Home in Holyoke. He died of COVID, and she couldn't be with him, of course, as so many people were unable to be at the bedside. They had nurses and doctors holding up tablets so that they could say goodbye. She was just grief-stricken over that. She felt relief that there was someone there with him who she trusted and had developed a relationship with. So she knew back then that she wanted to plan something for the anniversary of his death, if not his birthday. And so she plans to do something this April on the anniversary of his death to honor him as a veteran and to share in the grief with her family.
He wanted a graveside service, so I'm going to have this chaplain that I really have a strong connection with. We're going to have a ton of roses, and we're going to have a tap.
Well, I'm certainly glad that she'll be able to do that. That's reporter Marilyn Scherer. Thanks so much for bringing us this story.
Thank you, Paris. I'm happy to do it.
Before we go, I should tell you what else is up in Boston. A year ago today, Governor Charlie Baker declared a state of emergency in Massachusetts due to the coronavirus. To say a lot has changed since then would be an understatement. Businesses and restaurants have closed, some with hopes to reopen, others permanently. Nurses and doctors and frontline staff have been on call around the clock, some without proper protective gear. Essential workers have continued serving the public through their work. And still, more than 16,000 people have died in the Commonwealth, and hundreds remain hospitalized each day battling the virus. In our quarantine bubbles, it can be difficult to see the scope of these impacts, but for Michael Long, he sees it every day at work.
To start off our tours with a little bit of mood music.
Long is a driver for the Old Town Trolley Tours. Pre-pandemic, he and hundreds of people would stop each day and check out many of Boston's landmarks, places like the Bunker Hill Monument and Quincy Market. But not anymore. These days, he and his much smaller tours make just one stop, the Cheers Bar on Beacon Street, which is open, but a reminder of what's been lost these past 12 months.
A number of restaurants that I have enjoyed myself that I would recommend people check out, unfortunately, are closed for good.
It's not just tourism that's taken a hit. The state's arts and culture sector lost at least $590 million in revenue over the past year, according to the Massachusetts Cultural Council. The Lyric Stage Company has managed to hold on, and the Boston Mainstay plans to raise the curtain again this fall. Their artistic director, Courtney O'Connor, says it'll be a first night like no other.
And I almost started to cry just thinking about it. It's going to be such a wonderful emotional moment, and I just can't wait.
Michael Bobbitt from the Mass Cultural Council says individual artists have also been hit hard, losing an average of $10,000 in income over the last year.
And if you can imagine, these gig workers work very hard to pull together enough revenue just to survive on. So to lose that much was pretty devastating.
This year has been devastating for so many. We've lost lives and our routines. I mean, something as simple as a hug has been a risk. But things are getting better as the state is slowly but surely vaccinating our communities. Places are reopening safely. And they say it gets worse before it gets better. So I sure hope we're on our way there now. Before we say goodbye, I want to ask you a favor. We want to keep making this podcast the best it can be for you. But we need your help with that. So we created a survey, which isn't exactly breaking news if you're a regular listener. And we're already getting some awesome responses. One of the questions in the survey asks about the primary reason folks listen to Consider This. And one response that just came through gave some kudos to the mix of national reporting and local coverage of Boston and beyond, all rolled into one. It's the NPR way, folks. We love seeing your feedback roll in. And if you haven't submitted yours just yet, you've still got time. Head over to wbur.org/survey to share your thoughts. That's wbur.org/survey. And thanks. From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, the greatest combo since the end of the day and our latest episode, I'm Paris Alston. Be well. A lot happens in our city every day. Want the Boston version of this show along with WBUR's best local news stories all in a podcast feed? Just search WBUR News in your podcast app and hit subscribe. You'll be able to find the local segment of Consider This, plus our best coverage in business, tech, politics, education, and the arts, all in one place. Search WBUR News in your podcast app and hit subscribe.